Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with Kia. Full EV or plug-in hybrid? Go electric with Kia. For more, log on to kia.com.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And Joe at rte.ie. Veronica, good afternoon. Hello, Veronica. No Veronica there at the moment. Are you there, Veronica? No, no. Okay, we're awaiting a response about the tree issue, and other people are contacting. Pauline there, Pauline.
Hi, Leo.
How are you, Pauline?
I'm fine, Joe, thanks.
How long were you waiting in A&E?
I was waiting 7 hours. 2 hours to see the triage and 5 hours to see the doctor.
Tell us when.
Pardon?
When did this happen?
Last week, last Thursday.
Okay, so why did you go to A&E?
I had a letter from my doctor. My blood pressure was sky high. And he gave me a letter. I said, go immediately to the A&E. And I was told when I entered, it was black with people, Joe. Absolutely black.
Crowded, yeah.
And I was told when I entered that it would be an hour and a half to 2 hours for the triage, and then just wait after that.
Social distancing?
Social distance, yes. You could say that, Joe. There was sort of every other chair was social distance, but there was people with masks hanging off one ear. There was people with no masks. Two members of staff came through with cups of coffee and found someone they knew. They had no masks on them. They stopped for a chat for 10 minutes. It was unbelievable.
And what was the age group, Pauline? Insofar, was it mixed ages?
It was a mixed age group. But, you know, when you go into somewhere, like into a doctor's surgery, you wait outside till your time and you're only allowed to go in on your own. There was people with people, but they weren't allowed to go into the triage with the patient. But they were sitting on the seats and they all wore masks, mind you. The age group would go from, I'd say there's a child there, maybe 6 or 7, up to old age, 80s.
Wow. And was there any, just one example. We're told once you hit 60, your risk, if you get the COVID, goes up dramatically.
Exactly.
70, it goes up dramatically.
Exactly.
80, it goes up and...
Yep.
Was there any sense of that people, I don't know what age group you were in.
Priorities, no. No priorities. As you came in, so you went in to the triage.
Okay, so you were triaged.
No priorities.
You were triaged after an hour and a half.
It was 2 hours before I saw triage.
Okay. So what happened there?
He put a heart monitor on me and told me to go out and wait. And he said it could be 3 to 4 hours, which he wasn't far wrong on.
And then
I saw a doctor and he took blood, sent me for a chest x-ray, and then told me to wait for another 2 hours for the results, which I refused to do.
So all in all, how long were you in the hospital for?
7 hours.
Were you alone?
I went in at 20 past 2 and I came out at 20 past 9.
But you left of your own accord. They weren't finished with you.
I left with permission. He told me that if I went home and there was anything wrong, he'd call me and I'd have to go straight back. So he told me I could go to bed at midnight.
Okay.
He was very nice. Really nice man.
And
very nice
yeah,
man.
Sounds good. Were you on your own, Pauline?
I was.
And how did you get to? Did you drive yourself? Or
my doctor's not too far from the hospital.
Oh,
so I'd driven to the to doctors and I went straight then to the hospital.
Okay. And did the first person who saw you, Pauline, bear with me, did he ask you what age you were? He'd ask for your date of birth.
No, that would be in the letter. That was on the letter. I had a letter from my doctor that told the age.
And do you want to give us a general... I don't want your exact age.
Almost 80.
Wow.
And there was a good few people of my age there. I'm going to say that as well.
Yeah. So somebody over, what do you say, approaching, blinking or winking at 80, so to speak, somebody nearly 80 was 9 hours in an A&E.
Exactly, exactly.
But the government are saying, even with social distance, the maximum from next Monday when the pubs reopen and everywhere is 90 minutes.
Exactly. And then you get the likes of these pubs saying they're going to stay open, they're not going to take a heed of anybody else, they're going to do what they damn well please. And that really annoys me, Joe. That really annoys me. The doctors can't manage as it is in the hospitals, as I've just explained. And they just want to flout the laws and go their own way.
Oh, you're saying if the pubs reopen, that means more in A&E. Is that what you mean generally?
Well, no. What I'm trying to say, Joe, is they said that they can have 90 minutes, right?
Yeah.
And there's a particular pub that's been on the news just recently that said they are not going to do that. They're going to open for longer and they don't give a damn.
Well, they do so give a damn. I mentioned it there an hour ago when I was talking to Ronan. There is one pub, it's a cafe, restaurant, stroke pub called Oscar's. It's in Smithfield.
Correct.
And I think Ronan said he'd come on because I mentioned it. This is the owner. I mentioned it an hour ago. And I read his posting, and it's a long posting, but he says on one hand, he thinks the 90 minutes is a joke. It's unworkable and unenforceable. And on the other hand, he says the conditions I'm going to impose will make the place even safer. Anyway.
How does he know that?
Well, hopefully we'll hear from him. Pauline, by the way, how are you now, Pauline? You okay?
As far as I know, I haven't got any results back yet, Joe. So okay. I didn't get a call back that evening anyway.
And how did you manage during the lockdown?
I live on my own, Joe.
Yeah.
So I have a garden and I have two dogs. So I was okay. I was
but
fine.
You're very, even from your voice, you're very active, it seems.
I am pretty active, yeah.
Active. Well, then how did you manage being over 70 and told not to leave the house for 3 months?
I have a fair-sized garden, Joe, and I've got two doggies that I was able to walk up and down the road. So okay. I was able to get out.
Okay, say with us, Pauline, because this is another aspect of lockdown as well, from Veronica, joe@rt.ie is the email. Veronica, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
And it's your son, and unfortunately, he was diagnosed with a borderline personality disorder, but this happened last January, just before the lockdown. So what?
Yes, that's
and
correct.
He's, and he's in his 20s, so what happened?
Well, the situation is, you know, over the years we've been trying to get him help, and we went to a very eminent psychiatrist, went privately, and we got the diagnosis finally. Mm-hmm. And we thought, great, we got to the root of the problem. And then obviously medication and therapy. And the therapy he recommended was supposed to start, but now with COVID, of course, everything went belly up. But the reality is now, the frustration I'm feeling, Joe, is, mm-hmm. You know, every time I ring the HSC for this particular therapy, they keep saying, we're waiting on government guidelines, And I'm thinking to myself, like, my son is ready now for this therapy. He needs it. It's vital. It's a group therapy, which can be done in obviously a smaller setting. And there's no answers. You know, the Minister for Health, mm-hmm. Simon Harris, you know, they're just dragging their heels. I mean, I read an article there last week, a young girl waiting on cancer problems. Mm. And these are vital services. They can reopen hairdressers, which is great, don't get me wrong, I'm delighted. And all these other services. You know, the government can fast track from August the 10th to suddenly now. And yet, they still can't open vital services.
And what type of therapy does your son need?
It's a specific therapy, Joe, you know, and it's something he has to do within a therapy setting. Can't do it video or whatever.
I understand.
So every time I ring, they keep saying, waiting on government guidelines. And I'm thinking, they're dragging their heels at government. Why mm-hmm. can't they fast forward essential services when they can fast forward other services like hairdressers, pubs, and et cetera? And I rang the Department of Health. Can't get anyone on the phone. If I could speak to Simon Harris directly, who is the main guy, I would mm-hmm. say, why are you not opening essential services? These are people's lives at risk, Joe. These are very important services they need to reopen. And they're not doing it. And they're not even given any guidelines.
The mental health services, yeah.
Yes. And any health, I mean, cancer, the whole lot. But I'm just talking about mental health services. Even the psychiatrists, they haven't reopened either privately. Mm-hmm. And yet they're saying 15-minute rule. But like hairdressers, if you go to a hairdresser, a woman could spend an hour with a hairstylist. And they have stepped up to the plate.
Yeah. And did your son get any therapy before the lockdown?
No. None.
And do you mind me asking, did the psychiatrist that you went to, did he or she put a name on the his condition?
Oh, yes, yes, yes. Now, you know yourself, you get the diagnosis and then trying to get the services. You know, we all know the mental health services in this mm-hmm. country is dire. And trying to get the help. But when we finally did get this particular therapy, we're waiting for it. We're waiting for it to start. And then, obviously, it's not the clinic's fault because they're waiting on government guidelines. So their hands are tied.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I'm thinking, I'm frustrated, Joe. I'm saying, what is the delay? These are, like, you know, as Gandhi said famously, you know, a society is judged on how they treat the most vulnerable and the most weak. Well, if that's the case, we really are very low on the league table. Because I don't want my son to be a statistic. And we all know how high suicide rate is in this country.
Oh,
and let me tell you, after all this crisis is over, there's going to be a tsunami of mental health problems with the trauma. So I'd love to ask the Minister for Health, Simon Harris, when is he going to get his finger out and start opening up these essential services? Or some spokesman for the health service. When are they going to do this?
Okay,
I'm frustrated. That's what I need to ask.
I hear that clearly. Mary, stay with us. Mary Sheridan is in Cavan. Mary, you're looking for similar information about a different area. It's your daughter.
My daughter has a learning disability. She's autistic and nonverbal.
Okay.
She goes to a day centre in Carrick-on-Shannon in the last 8-9 years. Plus, she has shared care, which means she's so many nights every month in the centre, in the respite centre, and then she's at home with me on other nights. But since March, she's at home full-time, and I'm her full-time carer.
Mm-hmm.
There's nobody else, only myself, to care for her.
Oh, God, yeah.
So it's 24/7 since March.
And how have you been managing?
Not very well. It hasn't been a plain sailing, as I say. Mm-hmm. It's been a rather bumpy road.
Yeah.
And
have you been told when the services will reopen?
No. No, that's really what we want to highlight.
Yeah.
We want somebody from the HSE to give us some idea or to give us a date when these services are opening for our children again. Because she's nonverbal, she's autistic, and I keep telling her what's happening, but it just goes over her head. She doesn't understand. She can't get her head around it. You know, and she's getting rather, you know, cross and a bit violent with me here at home as well. She's nonverbal and she's very anxious and unsettled, and she takes her frustration out on me.
Oh, God. Oh, Mary.
So it's not easy. It's not easy
and
to...
You're there... It's just yourself and herself.
It's just myself and herself, yeah. I'm there 24/7 with her since the 17th of March. No break. I'm supposed to be able to care for her on my own, you know, and there's no word about how many people it takes to look after her when she's in her day services or in her respite services. But suddenly everything is just dumped on us parents, you know, and
have you got any help, Mary? Have you
No. Just a little bit of support, maybe for a few hours, a day or two a week, but that's all. It's only just a few hours. I haven't had a night off since the 17th of March.
And do you mind me asking, Mary, when you say there's physical stuff, does she beats her chest or beats your chest? I don't know what.
She'd hit out and she would hit me and pinch me, and she would get aggressive.
And how do you calm her down? Do your best, I suppose.
Try to do your best, or maybe just walk out of the room, leave her there, and try to calm yourself down and go back in and try and diffuse the situation as best you can.
And the services that she normally attends, have any of them been in touch with you to say, can we, I don't know if you can do some of this stuff over the phone or a Zoom call or whatever?
There's not a lot you can do with her over the phone. It doesn't make...
Yeah.
She just has to, she can't understand. She's here all the time. She thinks she should be going back to her services. a Zoom call, anything like that, would mean nothing to her.
Yeah, okay.
You know, it wouldn't mean anything to her. She wouldn't understand it.
And Mary, when she gets understandably annoyed and frustrated and she doesn't understand and she might be asking the same question over and over again, doesn't understand why everything is suddenly out of the blue gone, like, can you, if she does get aggressive, can you ring anyone for help?
There isn't anyone really that I can ring. There's nothing really. I just don't ring. I just keep get away from her and, you know, just let her calm down and sort of try and calm myself down and that I'm better able to deal with the situation. But that's all taken a toll on me and on my health as well. Like, and my daughter, she's suffering actually from depression and she's on medication for that now since this started.
Yeah. Have you had occasion to go to your GP?
I have, yes.
Yeah.
I've had to get medication for myself as well.
Okay, well, I'm glad that you went.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But we can't understand why all the services are, everything else is opening up in the country. Sport, public houses, everything is opening up, cinemas. It's just really like as if our children don't count. They're just being, they're being ignored and they're being pushed to one side.
I just think it's incredible.
And it's very annoying on parents.
Well, it's very upsetting. It's very difficult, Mary.
It is.
I don't know how you're doing it nonstop since March the 17th or just before it, when everything shut down. 24/7, you're together.
Yeah. Yes.
She's 37 years of age. I presume she's of normal stature.
Yeah, yeah. Yes, yeah. She is. And she's strong. I'm getting weaker, getting older.
And do you feel in danger at all, Mary?
Well, I just feel upset when she gets like that, and I feel as if I'm trapped here with her, and a bit resentful at times that she can dominate and decide what happens. It's really as if she's the parent and I'm the child.
Yeah. And we've been contacted by numerous parents.
I'm sure you have.
In this situation, but others who have, say, children with Down syndrome. And there was an announcement. I must have misread it. I thought there was an announcement made by the minister that children with Down syndrome, there would be sessions for them in July. But it turns out that's just for primary school students. And the post-primary have been completely left out.
Well, that's what happens. It's once these people come to 18, they don't stop having a learning disability or whatever it is.
Of course, yeah.
It's just what they've been highlighting is the services for the children, and rightly so. They're entitled to them. But our children don't stop. They don't get rid of their disability when they come to 18 or 21.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're adults then, but they're still children in their mind. They still think like children.
Yeah.
So it's really just that they're being ignored, and it's as if they can be just shoved to one side. It's similar nearly to what happened, I think, in the nursing homes in the beginning.
Okay, stay with us, Mary and Pauline, indeed, because and Veronica, because more people are contacting us about what's not been said about the reopening for critical areas like your own situation, Mary, and Pauline's point about A&E, 9 hours. She was in A&E and she's told she waited in A&E and she's told that max she should be in a pub is 90 minutes. So what's good for the pub surely should be good enough for A&E.
Well, you know,
Or vice versa. Stay there. I'll talk to more people. Stay with us after this break. 51551, wash your hands.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And we're talking about people who have been left out of the reopening, it seems. Pauline contacted us originally. She was in A&E for 9 hours and she's upset that pub's 90 minutes. Max, A&E, 9 hours, she was in it. Kira, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe, how are you?
Good. What happened in your case, Kira? What's been delayed?
Just my main concern, I suppose, like that, is opening of essential services, particularly for women's health. I was due a smear test in March, and contacted the local GP, and obviously with full shutdown of services, and this wasn't happening. So in my eyes, I thought, okay, this is something we wait for. So my other previous results have been fine over the years, so I wasn't too worried.
Okay.
As well as that, I've been undergoing IVF treatment, fertility treatment, last number of months. So I was due to start another round there on March 16th and got a phone call that morning to say it was cancelled. So obviously I was devastated and had a couple of weeks during lockdown of upset and all this and not fair, blah, blah, blah. Got through it.
It was cancelled at short notice because everything collapsed.
Yeah. So waited in hope for things to start again. So got a phone call there a couple of weeks ago saying they're back open. I've been today then for start again, and my smear test is now out of date, and I can't continue with treatment until that is, like, I have to have a smear test day, and it has to be, I can't do anything until that's done. So contacted cervical check, and nothing operating. I rang my GP and asked, is there any private services that are done, where it could be done privately? I mean, I've paid thousands at this stage for stuff, so... So that's my scenario, and it's very devastating. I mean, I'm 39 years of age now, so I'm worried about my future of having kids, and it's just another stepping stone. As Veronica mentioned there about, you know, you have hairdressers opening up, beauticians opening up, which is fantastic and everything, but it just seems kind of wrong. Anyway, but...
Now, there is cervical screening. The minister said yesterday it will be back very, very soon.
Yeah, now when I spoke to them on the phone earlier on, they couldn't give me a date or couldn't say when this has happened. And I mentioned my scenario on how I'm now, after having waited 3 months with the IVF clinic, have to further wait. And I spoke to another person earlier on who said she had had a screening test done in February and she's still waiting for results. So... you think of things like that, you don't seem too hopeful.
So they say
taking that long for results to come back.
But the HSE are saying screening restart dates will be announced by the end of this month. Yeah, we're at the 22nd now, so we've another 9 days effectively.
Yeah. I think as well, like, I mean, Vicky Phelan, who had campaigned so strongly and so fabulously in The Lady from Limerick, and the whole scandal that happened last year with the backlog and everything, and this is just seems another scandal that's, you know, and as well, it's not just cervical check, there's, I think there's other screening, other types of cancer screening tests that have been cancelled also and postponed. So, you know, it's just,
they say screening invitations will be issued on a phase basis according to clinical prioritisation.
Exactly. So, you know, you're in the scenario there where you kind of think, you know, should I ring my GP and say that I've got symptoms and I don't have symptoms, just to kind of jump a queue as such. And I'm sure people have contacted previous to me and there'd be a huge waiting list. So it's just the worry that's there, and, you know, you just get anxious about everything. And like that, I was excited this morning, kind of back to deflated again of another waiting list and a backlog, and everything has to be in place before we can move on.
And you can't, I know you won't do this, the false symptoms, because you'd be as conscious as anyone else that if you jump the queue, that pushes someone else out, so.
Oh, exactly, exactly. And I mean, I understand.
And there's there's no way the IVF clinic will say, no, we'll go ahead. Why is the smear so important on such a regular basis?
It's just, no, to be honest, I'm in agreement with them.
Okay.
Of course, that's the way it is. But just for the embryo's health, for my health, they have to check that everything, I mean, there's such health and safety concerns and issues with the clinic, which is fabulous, but just frustrating at the same time when you can't just make an appointment for tomorrow morning and then head on and carry on as normal.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to voice my concern about that.
You're right,
and I'm sure
right,
there's other women, even in other scenarios where... just in general, to have your, like, routine checkups done, that it should be just part of what we do.
Yeah.
You know, not having this huge, long backlog and wait.
Really strange times. Difficult times for so many people. Okay, Ciara, best of luck and touch
wood. Okay,
thanks for contacting us. Roisin Tracy. Roisin, good afternoon.
Hi, how are you, Joe? How are things?
Well, how are you?
I'm good. I'm not too bad. So I was just on telling the story that I have a chronic pain condition. So it's called trigeminal neuralgia. Yeah. It's a condition that affects the trigeminal nerves in your brain, right. Essentially. But it's quite debilitating. So I'm actually out of work from it at the moment.
It's painful.
It's extremely painful. It's excruciating pain. It's quite difficult to live with, to be honest.
And where does the pain show itself?
So the pain would be it's the right side of my face. I had a condition called Bell's palsy that essentially my face kind of drooped on one side, and this came on afterwards. So the pain is on the right side of my face, goes down into my cheek. But it just means that anything like brushing your teeth or if the breeze comes along, that can trigger a pain flare, and the pain is quite intense.
And how have you been during the lockdown?
So essentially, not coping too well, really, with the hospital, the systems, the way it went. I had an appointment with a pain specialist organised in a public hospital in March, and it got postponed to April. Then it eventually got cancelled. So I had to go. I do have health insurance, but because the HSC took over the
private hospitals.
And I couldn't actually use it, so I had to pay to go to a pain consultant separately, and then pay for any treatments that he did, because essentially the insurance won't cover it, because it was they were saying, oh well, the HSC have taken over the hospitals, we're not covering any of those treatments now.
And what treatment does
it work? I had radiotherapy on that side of my face. I had lidocaine and ketamine infusion to try to dull the pain. I've had nerve blocks into that side of my face. But again, the insurance companies won't cover what they're calling facility fee, because you're meant to be covered under the public hospital now, the way they did the transaction.
And I suspect from even the glimpse, I don't think anyone could get a full appreciation of the amount of pain, except by the amount of medication you're on. How much have you had to spend?
Oh, Jesus, we're looking at it. It's into the thousands.
But you've no choice, isn't that your...
Yeah, and I mean, I'm out of work, so it's actually my family. But, you know, it's not even me.
Yeah.
So it's putting immense pressure on them, as well as having to look after me. And it's quite upsetting to see your family, and for my friends as well, to see me in such pain. And I am only 24, you know.
And so, do you think you can be, well, obviously the medics do, but do you think anyone, a lay person, would adequately understand? The pain from what you say sounds absolutely excruciating.
And they do class it as one of the most painful conditions in the world. And when I try to explain it to people, I can't even explain it in words, because the pain goes, when I go through an intense flare of pain, I can't describe it. It feels like electric kind of shocks up your face. Or barbed wire or something, but it's very hard to put it into words.
And what if anything helps?
So, I mean, I'm on medications. It's trial and error with the different medications. The lidocaine and the ketamine didn't actually work for me, so I've been on to my consultant today. I'm going to arrange another appointment, but I am meeting with a neurosurgeon in 2 weeks. To see if there's any surgery that can be done on that particular nerve in my brain.
Yeah. Oh, and how are you today, Roisin?
I'm actually, do you know what? I'm in great form. Well, I'm in great form. Brilliant, yeah, I'm listening to your show, which I'm a big fan of, and I'm trying to relax.
Okay, but do you live in dread of a coming back?
Oh, I do, constantly. It's really affected my mental health. The lockdown has affected us all in so many different ways, but my mental health is suffering. I have crippling anxiety. I'm constantly worried and scared that the pain is going to strike again. And we just need the services back and for everything to be up and running as normal. If they can open up services such as hairdressers and pubs, I can't see why, you know, hospitals can't be priority.
All those services,
the services have so many needs.
Okay, Roisin, I hope
thank you so much.
Thank you. I don't know what to say to somebody who's in so much pain. I've heard of that. What's the trigeminal neuralgia before? And we've had people on here describing it. It is Unbelievably painful. And anyway, Roisin, stay well. That's Roisin Tracy, 51551, my chance.